Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. Hope everybody's having a good week. I know some people are getting drowned, and others are getting fried, and others are like some really good sausage. They're getting smoked out in California.
Yeah.
And none of those three things are really any good. I'm in the fry territory. Jesse, I don't know, you're probably far enough over, you're not getting a bunch of the rain like they're getting on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, we are.
But,
it's raining right now as we speak.
Oh, okay.
It's ugly out there right now.
Yeah. But, yeah, things are crazy around the country. It's hot here. It was 102 again today. So, and there was no air moving today. I mean, it was just dead still. Yeah. And I mean, I went out, ran a quick errand this afternoon, and I'll tell you what, in that sun, I got a blue T-shirt on, and it's not a real dark blue, but it's, you know, not a light blue either, but I tell you, that sun was just brutal out in the sun. It wasn't so bad when you got out of the direct sun, but man, oh man.
Yeah.
Being in a freaking toaster oven.
I'm sure it got hot as three hells, as we say around here.
Yeah, really. Well, I'm going to unmute Miss Terry. Good evening, Mary. How are you?
I'm in the soaked region.
You're in that soaked area, are you?
Yeah, Haley just ran outside a few minutes ago, and it's been pouring rain, and I followed her out. I said, what are you doing? She said, look, Grandma, there will be a rainbow. I said, huh? She said, the sun's coming out, and it's still raining. That makes a rainbow. So I looked up,
yeah.
And I said, well, the sun's coming from the west. Let's look to the east, and sure enough, there's a huge rainbow. And I said, congratulations on knowing how those happen.
Hey, there you go. Absolutely. Well, Jesse, before we get lost in the shuffle here, you want to do your infamous disclosure?
Infamous, huh?
Or disclaimer, I should say, not disclosure. That is unless you have something you want to disclose as well.
Right. No, I'm good. Just welcome everybody. And welcome to our call for those that are new, and of course our regulars, you're just as welcome. I'm a little tired, guys. I've been running, literally zero time off on Thursday. David, I got to leave to Richmond, Virginia again, another like 10-day stretch. So it's been nonstop. But anyway, guys, if you've come to this call seeking out legal advice, please hang up the phone now and go do something else because there is none to be given here. We do not give legal advice, guys. We are not attorneys. We don't purport to be attorneys, and we have no clue what it is. But if you're here to have fun and discuss your situation or our situation, which I'm going to start off the good news and you'll see why, then that's great and dandy. We're going to share our strategies of our wins, our losses, our defeats. That's just the way it is. But again, guys, if you're looking for that legal advice stuff, you need to just hang up and get out of here. Other than that, we just filed a lawsuit, funny enough for me, David, against Wells Fargo, my wife. And while I was gone, we were doing some stuff, even though, I'm gone, but I'm still available by phone, obviously, and email. So I do take my time and catch up on the work. At the end of the day, Wells Fargo had a lien on the home as a second. Well, that second, when they sued, was reduced to judgment, which means they lose their lien, right? In Florida, when you elect your method, you have elected to take a lien and reduce it to judgment. Therefore, there can't be a lien on the property. You can't have your candy and eat it, right? So, or your cake and eat it. So you can't have a judgment and a lien. Does that make sense? When you're having seconds on homes, if you've reduced it to a judgment, a dollar amount, then the lien has to be released. Okay? I know it's confusing for some people because they're thinking, wait a minute, if I get a judgment, I can put a lien on your house. You're right, if it's that order. If you get a judgment and you're in the state that allows you to lien the home, or it's the type of judgment that allows you to lien not just the home but whatever assets that person has or the other has, and you're fine. You're right. You're correct. But in this case, it's a second, right, a credit line defaulted, taken to court. They elected to sue and take a money judgment. So now that you've got the money judgment, you have to release the lien. Well, guess what they did? They put insurance on that lien, which no longer exists. And what does that mean, David? That's an attempt to collect debt, isn't it?
They took a legal action they're not entitled to take.
Yeah, so when I saw it before I left, I thought, oh, these people are ignorant. My God. And so the day I had everything verified, because we did a verified complaint, and some small claims and ready to go for about another 40 or 50 days it'll take before I get the date. So I'm getting back in the roll. It's a little late in 16. I've been kind of hem-hawing around. I got probably 15 TCPA cases I haven't even looked at, because I get lazy with all the other work, and then when I do get some free time, the last thing I want to do is sit here and start writing complaints. It just, it's so busy. You know, David, you know my schedule, so it's go.
Yeah, oh yeah, believe me, I know.
I have an easy
one. The hurrier you go, the behinder you get.
Exactly. I got an easy one right now that against Wells Fargo. TransUnion, that I still haven't even got to. And it's a simple one. I mean, it's a simple take their money lawsuit type of deal. And I just haven't had the damn chance to do anything with it. Terrible, isn't it? I feel bad almost, like I should be doing something.
You almost feel bad, but you can't quite get there.
Yeah, pretty close. You're right, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just can't quite get there. But, man, I tell you, it's a tough nut to crack, you know. But so that's my good.
Well, there's lots of opportunities out here if people will pay attention, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, some people's lives are pretty quiet. Others, they're not as quiet. You know, I get plenty to do, and you do as well. But, you know, it's paying attention to the details on what's going on, you know. That's what can get you those checks coming in. Of course, you know, when we talk about good news, we part of good news is getting checks, which that's always nice, you know. I'm looking forward to getting a really big check next year.
Yeah.
Because it'll take till.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be a big check when I get my stuff resolved, which I believe will be next year.
More than what you thought of as a nice retirement.
Let's just put it this way. It's going to pad my wallet substantially.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at the amount of work that I've gone through. You know, I've got a 6-foot stack of paperwork so far. Literally.
Right.
But, you know, but I'm not talking, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 either. I'm talking substantially more than that. Many, many multiples of that. So, you know, I mean, the opportunities are out there, but if you don't know how things work, if you don't know what the consumer protection statutes say, and you don't know how to utilize the courts properly, well, you know, you're kind of behind the eight ball. You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to go hire a lawyer and then hope that the lawyer does what you want him to do, or doesn't screw up the case, or doesn't just take your money and go? I mean, there's plenty of them to do that. But, you know, we found the majority of cases, obviously, it's beneficial for us to handle things ourselves. Now, you know, I got to tell anybody new that's on this call, 5.5 years ago, I didn't know anything about this stuff. And if somebody had told me that I was going to be a plaintiff in federal court, I'd have told them they were stark raving mad. I mean, that just would not happen. Me in federal court? Oh, my God. I mean, maybe state court, but federal court? No way. Well, look where I've come. I've been a plaintiff in probably 130 federal lawsuits, 106 of which are going against one company right now, and the same company. For those of you that may be new, I have 106 federal lawsuits against the same company. And then I have another lawsuit against somebody, and it's all this is on phone calls. It's all on TCPA violations because I had some idiots that kept calling my cell phone. And when I told them to quit over 50 times, they didn't, you know, they must have had their hearing aid turned off, I guess is the best thing I can say.
Yeah, they don't listen to you, David. That's all. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know that.
So they're going to pay in the long run. But anyway, if anybody has got any good news, I want you to hit the one key on the keypad in your phone. This is for good news only now. We'll see if anybody's got any good news. Terry, you got any good news?
No, I just checked the docket. Nothing yet.
Okay. Well, all right. There's Larry. Larry's unmuted. Good evening, sir.
See there?
I don't know. All right. Well, we have.
Dave, did you call me?
I just said Larry's unmuted. Good evening.
Hello there. Yeah, I switched phones.
Yeah, we were talking about you. We won't tell you.
Oh, really? Was it good? Mostly good?
No, we're going to keep
it
a secret. You got any good news for us?
Yeah, actually, I do. In my best my case, you know, the only thing I have left is two TCPA claims, one with 23 phone calls against our favorite Midland Credit Management, and the other with 42 calls against Best Buy. So I've already settled with Best Buy, I think it was $5,000 for the non-TCPA claims, and then I told you guys last week, and I've taken in about $50,000 in this one case so far. But I told you, I talked to the attorney for Best Buy, and he said, well, you want to just, you know, drop the TCPA claims and, you know, take what you got? And I said, no, thanks, I appreciate it, but I'm not going to do that. So today I got an email from him asking if I wanted to settle for $5,000. And this is after, for 42 calls. This is after they made a motion to dismiss, and I told you guys about this before, where they claim strenuously that my claims under FDCPA and FCRA and the Florida Consumer Collection Practices Act could not survive because they are not a debt collector and they were not attempting to collect a debt. And then in the same motion to dismiss, and those claims were already resolved anyway in the offer of judgment, and then in the TCPA portion of the motion to dismiss, they said they were a debt collector. So in my response, I pointed this all out to the court, and the court just denied their motion entirely. A couple of days ago, I got the response or the order. So I wrote the guy back, and I said, you know, basically, you've already admitted that Best Buy is not a debt collector. Therefore, the only reason they could have called me is to engage in telephone solicitation. I do not have a business relationship with you. I never gave you permission. I'm on the do not call list, and I told you guys to stop calling me. So I said the case could be worth $63,000, 42 calls times 1,500, but I'll take $50,000 to settle it. So I'm waiting to hear back from him.
Yeah, I was going to say. dear.
He probably started that for a while.
That's fun.
You know how I came up with that number? Because I just like... Yeah, well, he offered $5,000, and I just multiplied it by 10.
Well, very good.
Yeah.
That works for me because I don't need a calculator.
I mean, I'll take $12,000 off my maximum statutory damages just to settle the case. I can go for that. Oh, I also mentioned that I'm apparently, and I told him I'm going to send discovery instead of deposition, too. Apparently, it looks like this is a common practice for Best Buy. So I've talked to an attorney about filing a class action lawsuit, which I've alluded to before. Yeah, and they weren't excited to hear that news.
Yeah, you know that Best Buy already settled a huge class action not too long ago, right? So.
Yeah, I don't know all the facts.
About it several times. Yeah, they've done that already for texting.
Apparently they didn't learn much.
No, they don't. They're dumb as a brick. But they paid a bunch of money. I think it was like $12 million or something in that last one. It was pretty substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it truly is amazing
that
these companies do this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll settle for a small amount of that. I have no problem.
Well, that is good news. Hey, sounds like you're having too much fun. Almost.
A little bit. Oh, by the way, Dave, I need to get with you and see what discovery you have for TCPA claims. So.
Oh yeah, I've got some stuff. In fact, I'm waiting. They're going to answer my. He said they're going to be answering my discovery in this case on Wednesday. So, we'll.
Oh, that should be interesting. Is that the first discovery response back?
Yeah. They got it, and I've been going back and forth with the doofus attorney to get the protective order done. He sent me a draft copy. He said, well, instead of redlining the one you sent me, you know, let's just use this one. So we reviewed it, and I emailed him back. I said, that's fine. Go ahead and file it with the court. You have my consent. Well, he didn't do it anything today. And he says, well, you know, if this isn't approved by the court, when he emailed me, he said, if this isn't approved by the court, by the time I answer discovery, I can supplement it after that. Well, that tells me that he's going to hide behind, confidential, can't answer this, can't answer that, no protective order. But I sent the draft protective order to him 4 weeks ago. Now, granted, he was gone for 2 weeks out of the country, but now he screwed around for a bunch of time after that. So I got real terse with him yesterday, and he responded to me. But we'll see. So, yeah, I do have some discovery. I tailor each one.
Of course. Oh, by the way, the attorney that I'm dealing with in this case now is not the same one who filed the motion to dismiss.
Oh,
gee, I wonder why.
Decide they wanted to change. Oops, that didn't
work.
Well,
given
so
that
good.
She lost the case for him, I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, well. Yeah, too bad, so sad, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you got any other good news for us other than that?
Well, that's pretty much it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to ask one more time if there's anybody out here that has any good news for us before we go to Q&A. Hit the 1 key on the keypad in your phone. If nobody pops up, then I'm going to open it up for Q&A, and we'll answer questions. I know it's slower here in the summertime, and we're kind of in that last part of the summer where everybody's running around doing stuff, starting to get kids ready for school. So we know that there aren't as many people on the calls, which, it is what it is. So, and Jesse, that's got to be your cell phone because we're getting that echo. Does anybody else hear that echo on the phone?
Why do you keep blaming a cell phone?
Because cell phones usually do it. I've dealt with that for years on TalkShoe too.
So do wireless
they do that.
Phones. So do headphones. They all do it.
Well, no, now it's not doing it.
That's my point.
So, anyway, well, I'm going to go to 928 for our first question of the night. Anybody's got questions, hit the 1 key on the keypad in your phone. That'll put you in the queue, and we will take your questions. But 928, you are up. Go ahead. You're already unmuted. If you don't speak, we're going to move on.
I'm just trying to get some education.
Okay, go ahead.
Like I said, I'm just trying to get some education. So my first time on, so bear with me.
Oh, okay. Well, did you have a specific question for us?
No, sir. I just want to know about your process. And
okay. Well, there's
involved with
all,
it, so
all sorts of
things. Right. And as this is my first time, I'm sure that I have an awful lot to ask. I mean, to learn before I start asking questions. So thank you for the time.
Okay. Well, just go ahead and listen in and, start studying. If you're a member of the website, start studying in there. And when you do have questions as you're going along, that's what we have these calls Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night for us to help answer those questions for you if we can.
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night, same number, same time?
No, the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday calls are different, and I will announce all that information at the end of the call here tonight.
That will be fine. Thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. everybody keeps bumping up in the there we go. Okay, the board finally moved. All right, we're going to go to 708. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello, is that me?
That's you. Hi. You are in the spotlight. Can't you feel the heat?
Great. Hi, I'm Michael, and I've got a question about a foreclosure.
Well, and we've got the man here to answer it for you, that's for sure.
Okay, great. In this particular foreclosure, we have been through Chancery Court and received a summary judgment. And I was wanting, well, let me just give you a little bit of background real quick. The bank, which is Wells Fargo, has entered a foreclosure for a fraudulent note. The note that was signed and the mortgage that was signed was from CTX Bank in 2002. The note that they foreclosed on was Wells Fargo in 2003. We never signed any note or mortgage in 2003.
So,
and they're saying that that's the original note and mortgage. Yes, I
brought
it up to the attorney several times. When the attorney,
to the court.
Yes, the attorney brought it up to the court, but he brought it up at summary judgment.
And when you say the attorney, are you talking about your attorney?
My attorney.
Oh, yeah, something is wrong with you waiting to the last minute.
He waited to the last minute to do it. And because he did that, the judge ruled against us. Now,
well, that's still not reason for the judge to rule against you. That's just not.
Right. Okay. So my question is, after the fact, can we now go to federal court and sue for fraud?
You don't need federal court to sue for fraud. You need to sue. You could sue them for wrongful foreclosure. That can get you a whole bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to do that in the federal court. You can do that right. The federal court has no jurisdiction over your property. So.
Yeah, but okay. I'd suggest getting a different attorney because it doesn't sound
that's
like
right.
Your first
Absolutely.
One was too swift.
That's right.
Well,
that's
yeah,
right.
The attorney is jackleg, but the problem is he exhausted our resources.
I don't doubt that one bit. He bled you dry and then sold you out. That's what he did.
Exactly.
You got it.
And now, you know, they sent us something saying that we have 90 days before they file something to, you know, forcibly remove us from the property. Now,
forcible entry
and detention. Right. Now, here's something interesting. After they received the judgment from the judge, that the foreclosure was final. They also told our attorney that they would like to, what would it take for a settlement to make all of this go away?
I don't get that one.
I don't get it. If you win the judgment, why do you need a settlement?
Yeah, now, they got some doubt somewhere to come up with that kind of nonsense.
Exactly.
Now,
right.
Here's a question. Is your attorney appealing this at all?
I don't know because he hasn't called us back.
When did this occur?
Last
that 30
I heard.
Days.
Now, all of this happened July 6th. And he was supposed to have
days.
Done an appeal by, you know, by last
well,
week.
Just notice. Just notice of appeal.
A notice of appeal.
File an appeal.
A notice of appeal. Okay.
Wow, I don't even know.
You need to go look at the docket and find out whether he did.
Yes.
Okay.
And he should have sent
I
you something
that.
Also. And maybe that's
yeah.
why.
Yeah. And
we
have a real problem with
settlement.
Him. Right.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, we have a real problem with him being upfront with us, and giving us all the information we need. We even gave him a little bit of language to put in the in his motion to overturn or motion to dismiss the summary judgment, and he didn't even he showed me the language he put on the computer, but what he submitted to the court was totally different. It was
well,
okay.
I think you probably got a claim against that attorney.
Right.
You might have one. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, if he's telling you he's going to do this and then he does something else.
Right. And now we just don't know what he's doing. And then, you know, it's just, it keeps coming up more money.
How often do you contact him to find out what's going on?
Well, it's been about 4 days straight. And I haven't heard
I mean, how often? Do you call him every day?
No, but the last 4 days I have. I just call him to make sure we're updated what's going on with the next court date, that we're on the same page as far
as
what
he hasn't responded to you?
Correct.
Is his office local?
His office is local. He's in Chicago.
I'd go down and look him right in the eye.
Yeah.
That was.
Mm-hmm.
And tell him, this bull crap of you not communicating doesn't cut it. You got paid to do a job. You screwed that up. Now don't think that you can just walk off with my money and not do anything at this point.
Right. Yeah, he keeps going on. It's going to cost at least $10,000 for an appeal.
No, it's not
going
to cost anything at this point for him to communicate with you.
Right.
Why would it cost $10,000 for an appeal? Holy Lord, these guys are full of baloney.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a crooked
and
lawyer.
We've already given him close to 10. Just to defend
he's a crooked
the
lawyer.
Foreclosure. Yeah.
Yeah. Did he know about that problem with the notes and everything long before the summary judgment?
I tell you,
did he know
I
about it quite a ways in advance?
I called you guys a while ago. I gave him this information up front in the beginning.
Time-wise. I'm asking time-wise. How far before the summary judgment?
Three years he's known. Since the beginning.
Boy, you got a case against
him
for malpractice. 2013. Yeah, you got a case against him for malpractice. I'd be going after him on that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's inexcusable.
Yeah.
He should have dealt with that right up front and had that thing dismissed.
If
he had done any kind of a job at all.
And that's what I was getting at, but I think he was just trying to milk us for money.
Right. Well, that's typical lawyer.
Having all these fictitious. I mean, and even the judge said that he never presented an affirmative defense.
Oh God. Yeah. You have a claim against the attorney for malpractice. There's no question about it. Based on what you've told us here, you absolutely, without question, have a claim against that attorney for malpractice. He just took your money and screwed you.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And I would tell them that. I'm going to say, I'm going to file a claim against your malpractice. I need your malpractice insurance, please.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if he won't give it to you, then go to the State Bar Association and get it.
Yep.
Okay. Then I'll check and see.
He changes his mind on stuff. I'll bet.
I'll check and see if there was a notice of appeal already filed.
Yeah, check the docket.
Is that a 30-day time frame?
Usually it's no more than 30 days.
No more than 30. If it has not been filed.
Well, you're past, if that happened July 6th, that's past 30 days now.
Right. I'm saying if I check and it's not there, then it's not been filed, then our option.
Yeah, if it's not on the docket with the court, then he didn't do it.
Okay. Right. But then we can go forward.
But he said he was going to do it, right?
Yeah, he said he was going to do it. But I haven't heard from him.
Well, that would be another thing if he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd go after him hammer and tongs.
Yep.
Yeah,
he's
he didn't even file an answer.
Lawyers.
They went straight to summary judgment because he never filed an answer.
Oh, my God. He's incompetent.
He sold
you out.
I have a big claim against him.
Yeah,
right.
You got a major claim against him. You need to find a good attorney that sues other lawyers, and not one of his buddies, mm-hmm. obviously.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll
you've got
that.
A great claim against him, but you need to find out who he's got his malpractice insurance through and stuff. And if he won't tell you, then go to the State Bar Association.
Okay.
And I would not be sitting on that. I'd be moving PDQ on that.
We're going to move on that right away. as early as tomorrow.
But check your docket and find out whether he's got the notice of appealing. Because if he didn't do that, you're pretty much cooked on that as far as trying to pursue things from that direction.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna check that out immediately. If he did not, what court can we sue in Chancery Court for wrongful foreclosure, or is there a different court that we need to sue in?
Jesse, file in the
state court. You don't need anything special.
Yeah, I was going to say basically be in the same court, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So does that answer your questions?
It certainly does. I'm sure we'll have more on the next call that comes out.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, go check it out and get on her. Go after him.
Okay. And is there something we can do against the judge as well?
No.
No, you
because
can't do anything against the judge.
Nothing. They make a call like that.
No,
the
only thing
you
can do is get your appeal.
And...
Yeah, you get your appeal and you're done. You know what I mean?
Okay, great. Okay, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, man. Good luck, pal.
Jesus Christ. Thanks. Bye.
Boy, you know, I hate to hear crap like that, Jesse.
I know.
That just makes me so damn mad. Oh, man, I'm telling you. Crooked lawyers. All right, we're on to 702. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Irvin from Nevada. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hi, Irvin. You sound kind of muffled.
Hi. Oh, okay. Any better? Hopefully. Testing. I had posted a question on the forum, which Jesse was kind enough to answer, but I was a little unclear on his second response, in which I'm suing Carrington Mortgage Services for FDCPA and FDCP violations. And they said that because it's a rental property, 1692A5, that I'm not a consumer. I don't meet the definition of the consumer. And they referred to a case, Bloom versus IC System. And you said the first thing was crystal clear, Jesse. You said, right, you don't meet that. So then I said, after I posted the question, before you answered, I dug up from your website, Sparks versus Phillips, and I think that's Ann, Sechin, and Cohen Associates, which said any person can be a plaintiff, not just a consumer. So I said, even if my entire validation letter is now moot, it did insist in that letter that it did not call me again, which of course they did. So at the very least, they're still on the hook. I assume they're still on the hook for the TCPA violations. Right, and you answered, have you read it? Not even close. Pick it apart. It's a great case to learn from. So I didn't quite understand that. I mean, you're saying it's not even close to
being... What part? Come on. You're smarter than that. What do you mean? When they're talking when you're talking FDCPA, if you buy the house, like I have a rental property. I bought it, but I bought it as my main home first. I lived in it for over a year. So I didn't buy it as an income property. That's what you have to prove. Did you buy it as an income property, or did you live in it? Was it your main, or was it a secondary home that you decided to turn into a rental property?
No, I took over someone who deeded it to me.
Then you don't have – that's where I told you to read their case very carefully. That doesn't apply. You didn't even purchase the home. You just got it deeded to you.
Yes, exactly. But it just all right, so then it doesn't matter how many violations they do in that situation. You can't get any satisfaction from
them. Pretty much.
Right,
no.
Okay.
Yeah,
however,
you can't be covered under the FDCPA because you have to have incurred a debt for consumer household purposes.
Right. It's just
and
that
you didn't. All you did was assume it.
Right, but there is a provision in it. Letter Q about someone who takes over successor in interest, someone who takes title but does not take the obligations of either the mortgage or the note can be the successor. But again, he's not responsible for the obligation, so that's out, the FDCPA. Okay, just wanted to clarify that. Now it is clear.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, this is kind of embarrassing, but
why?
I thought that the finding situation, okay, a credit card company charges off a debt.
Yeah.
They send in their 1099-C for the IRS to get credit for that, whatever, and of course they sell it to a debt buyer. When it's charged off...
Whoa. Go back and repeat what you just said. Slow down, Alan.
Okay. They charge off the debt.
Yes.
Okay.
That's just an accounting maneuver. That doesn't mean the debt goes away.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
All right. So, standard. And they sell it, you know, 10 cents on dollar to whatever, junk debt buyer.
You can't. You got to stop there. That's where you need to stop. You said something, and this time you skipped the part. You said 1099-C IRS. If you're going to write it off and 1099 it, you can't sell it. You're taking the credit. Okay. Now you're violating not only, I'm sure, IRS law, but the FDCPA in every which way possible on your part.
Yeah, that's double dipping.
Write it off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't write it off and then take a 1099 deduction for it. That's just not cool.
Are you saying that's never done, in spite of the fact that it's not legal?
That you what?
Are you saying that that's never done? I have the impression.
I can't say that nobody's ever done it.
I haven't run into it.
I've never heard of it.
You can't take a debt, sell it to somebody, and then over here tell the IRS, well, I just took a loss for the whole thing. And you collected
money. Well, actually, that's funny you say that. Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that, but a lot of things which seem to be fraud are routinely done, as we all know.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, to clarify things, where you have to be careful is... Mm-hmm. Whether you are absolutely sure, 100%, that a debt has been sold, rather than somebody else is just trying to collect it. See, there's a difference. Somebody can be trying to collect it as a debt collector on a contingency basis. But, and a lot of people make the assumption, because they got a debt collector after them, that they bought the debt. That's not necessarily so. You have to make sure that you can prove that somebody actually bought a debt. Then, if somebody buys a debt, then the original creditor does a 1099. That is, like Jesse said, absolutely a violation of the law. But if somebody charges something off and then they send it out and the debt collector gets a hold of it and tries to collect money on it, but it hasn't been sold, then that's not a problem. And where you can get into things, you can actually have an original creditor that will go out, they will do their charge off, and then they will do a 1099, and that phantom information will be floating around out there, and a scumbag debt collector will get a hold of it, and they'll try and collect on it. And that's just blatantly illegal, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the original creditor that charged it off and did a 1099 even knows about it.
Oh, okay, because the reason this came up is an acquaintance of mine said that she called the IRS and made it out like she owed them some money and was getting inconsistent statements from the credit card. So she said, is it possible, and she sent them her identification and asked this number and everything, is it possible for me to get a history of what 1099s have been entered against my name, and lo and behold, this original creditor had filed in her name. So she thought that means that she could bring something against the debt collector for, I don't know, fraud against the court or some type of fraud. And
there is somebody that is trying to collect it, and the original creditor did charge it off and did a 1099, then the debt collector is on the hook, because they're attempting to collect a debt that they have no right to collect.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I thought I was missing something obvious that they did that, and this person, she's not a friend, but I don't think she would embellish or lie, and she said they definitely did try to come after her. So I just thought...
But that doesn't mean they're a debt buyer. That doesn't mean they're a debt buyer. They could be. That's a possibility. But you have to determine, she says, well, this debt collector came after me. Well, specifically, who is it that came after you? And you got to be able to drill down But either way, if the original creditor charged it off, the debt is gone. Nobody can be trying to collect it. So whether they allegedly bought it or whether they're trying to collect it on a contingency basis, either way, they violated the law because they attempted to collect something that they had no right to collect.
Okay. So
it's just that you want to have your facts straight. You don't want to say somebody's a debt buyer when they aren't. That's
right,
my point.
Right. I see. Okay. All right. Well, that seems... And let's see. Finally, this popped in my head since we spoke with the previous caller, Jesse. On the wrongful foreclosure, when, if I remember correctly, several months ago, you said one of the tactics you like when you get a notice of a sales date is to ask for a final payoff. Is that the terminology? I mean, a full payoff?
Yeah, but I never said
that
sale date. Yeah, not sale date. When you get the notice of...
Just notice that they're going accelerating?
Acceleration or default, yeah.
Right, I see. And if they ignore you and bulldoze over you, that's in addition to, that's not RESPA, but what's the specific thing for that?
It is TILA. Yeah, when you ask for a payoff, they can't do anything until they continue, you know.
Right.
We don't fool with it a whole lot. I mean, some of the attorneys here in Florida have used it and done okay with it. You know, it depends on the judge. The problem is, again, that, you know, just like you heard him say, the judge ran right through it just to make sure it's done. And I don't know where he lives, you know, what state, but in Florida, they'll sell your house. And no matter what the outcome of the appeal is, you never get it back.
Right.
Oh, you can win the appeal, but you don't get your home back. So, because the whole point is to have the judges want that put into the hands of the banks. Basically, they're helping them steal homes. It's fact.
I see. Speaking of Floridian, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just said it's a fact. That's all it is.
Oh, right. Speaking of Floridian attorneys, it's an outfit. So they can get their name, but they're offering an analysis where they go for violations of Dodd-Frank and the qualified written request in exchange for. Either 50% or 40%, you know, on a contingency basis. They claim that it's like a niche thing that may go away depending on who wins the election or whatever. But apparently it's pretty easy to make violations according to Dodd-Frank, which is only, 2 years old. Had you guys heard anything along those lines?
No.
At the origination. Let me see. Okay, let me just get it here because they sent me.
You said it's been 2 years of the origination?
No. I said he said this is for primarily for violations of the Dodd-Frank Act, which I had the impression Dodd-Frank was 2014. I didn't think it was that old. I don't even know.
Dodd-Frank was passed before that. Dodd-Frank was passed 4 or 5 years ago? 4 or 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah,
really? Oh, because I've heard real estate gurus complaining about the effects it has when you're trying to buy and sell a contract. And they maybe I didn't remember correctly, but they made it out like it was something fairly new, that particular aspect of it. So, let me see, I'm trying to find this guy's thing.
It's going to be new litigation.
I
just don't think that's new, period. You know what I mean?
Right. If I can't find it in 20 more chances, I give up it. That's the guy's name right here. It was out of Clearwater. I remember that. How close that is to you, Jesse. But, nope. Like he's not there. All right. Well, I guess I'll give up. But anyway, thank you very much for the information that you gave me and clarifying that confusion on the notes. And as always, you guys do a great job. And I guess it's very fulfilling to provide help with people and get the word out there. Because when I see some of the stuff that's still going on, it's still sometimes kind of disheartening.
Oh, it's insane, right? Yeah,
insane. Okay.
That's
thanks.
Insane.
Have a good one.
Okay. Dodd-Frank was signed into law by President Obama on July 21st of 2010.
Oh,
there you go.
You're right.
My birthday of all days.
Oh, really? You should remember that. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for your information.
All right. Thank you. All right. We're going to go to 214. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey guys, it's Keisha. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Keisha.
Hey Jesse. Hey Dave. So, I had court today regarding my forcible detainer. And, you know, last night I was telling you, Jesse, just so that you know, I got feedback. Hang on a second.
We've all got feedback here. It's Jesse's fault.
Oh, okay, okay.
He was the first one that came on the call, and we've had feedback ever since. It's all his fault.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure. So basically, Jesse, just so that you know, there's a Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code 16.003 that specifically states that there's a two-year statute limitation period. A person must bring suit for trespass, for injury, conversion of personal property, taking or detaining the personal property of another, personal injury, forcible entry and detainer, and forcible detainer not later than 2 years after the date the cause of action accrues. So, you know, initially the new alleged owner sent me a notice to vacate June 3rd, 2014, after they got it from the foreclosure sale. Well, they we went through court. They did a one for prosecution because the judge did a one for prosecution because they weren't moving the case forward May 23rd, 2016. Well, they sent a second notice to vacate on July 15, 2016, which, according to the statute of limitation for the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, it's now time barred. So I put in a motion to dismiss, a verified motion to dismiss, with all of these issues laid out, stating that, you know, if the limitation has run, a party seeking possession will be subject to the Latches Doctrine, and went into that with the Black's Law Dictionary and everything. Well, the attorney for the new owner said that the action occurs every time that I'm here. I'm like, no, it says from the date of the action accrues. Which means that you only bought it once. You've only been injured once. You're not injured each time. Because if that's the case, the statute of limitation will never, I mean, it will never stop. Like, there's no statute of limitation. It will be going against the law.
Dave, do you have a clear understanding of what she's saying? Because
I do. She's explained this to me.
Okay, tell me.
She read the stuff to me, and It's this is on stuff that has to do with forcible detainer. It's a two-year statute of limitations. Okay, they got a foreclosure judgment. They have to bring the action to at least from what Keisha is saying, the way it's written, that they have to bring the action to get you out of the property within two years. If they don't,
okay,
right. So they brought one, and then they screwed around. And it was dismissed for LOP, lack of prosecution. Then they came back and filed another one, but it was over 2 years past the foreclosure time. And that's what she's arguing is time
barred. They're screwed, if that's what they're saying, yeah. So what's your question? Because I'm not familiar with that.
No.
So.
Well, my question is, well, I really have a question, but the judge was saying the attorney said that it happens each day that I'm here. I said, no, it doesn't. It doesn't say day or date. It's after the day. And I said, that's not what it says. So you're actually making a new law. That's not what Congress set it up for. It's set up to be a statute of limitation because it's a prejudice against me if you wait and sit and not do anything.
Yeah, plus
and then you decide
the
to come back.
Latches, right? The principle of latches.
Right.
I did.
You brought that up, and that was in your writings and everything.
Yes, it's all in my writings. And the judge says, in 26 years, I have never seen anything like this before. You know, you're very creative. I said, I'm not creative. It's the law, you know, on what you say. But I think you need to really get some understanding. And I said, I do understand. It says exactly what it means. It says 2 years after the day that the cause of action accrues, which means it only accrues one time.
Not accrued.
They knew that they
accrued. Listen, you're saying
with
accrued.
The S.
It's occurred.
No. It says accrued with an S. ACCRUES.
Well, 2 years within the date that the action accrued? Think about that. That
yes.
doesn't even
accrues
make sense
with an S on the end, Jesse.
With an S on the end. ACCRUES, accrues.
Okay.
And the lawyer is saying, well, this thing keeps accruing.
That's
well,
kind of what
no.
I'm thinking now.
That would be ridiculous because then there wouldn't be any reason to have a statute of limitations.
Right.
So what happened?
Accrues.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Keisha,
so
what happened?
I'm just
so
tell
basically, he dismissed my motion to dismiss and granted them favor in their, granted possession, which I'm going to do the appeal for it. But I was like, that's not, and he dismissed my motion to strike because the attorneys, I put a motion to strike the attorney's affidavit, Jesse, and
yeah.
He penned in an affidavit saying that all that information was true and correct to, firsthand fact knowledge for what happened. So he has in copies of the deed of trust and the substitute trustee's deed and the notice to vacate that they sent. And I said that he can't testify that that's true and correct copies of anything. They only came into the case a year and 3 months later. So this is hearsay. Like, he can't attest to anything that they've done.
And what did he say?
He said that the public records are public. The documents are public record, so he can't attest. I said, no, it's not. You can't. Land records, anybody, I can go down there right now and put something in there. That don't mean it's correct. So you can. I object to that. And the attorney was like, well, I'm dismissing your motion to strike also.
Okay, Keisha, he didn't dismiss your motions. He denied, your
him.
Motions.
Yeah.
I mean,
use
well,
the proper
dismissed.
Terminology.
He
yeah.
said, the judge said dismiss.
That tells you how
yeah.
good a judge is. Give me that statute.
Yeah.
That
judge
you
is
said
a
you had. I'm going to look it up.
Bonehead.
Okay.
Right now.
It's Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code 16.003.
All right, hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
Really? Really, girl? I said hold on like six times. Okay, hold on. All right, Texas
Civil Practice.
Practice, uh-huh.
And Remedies.
Uh-huh, code.
Code 16.003.
I got to read this because that just, it doesn't make any sense to me. And there's other references here, too. 2 year statute of limitation, except as provided by Section 1610, 16.0031, and 16.0045. Have you read any of those?
No. Those are exceptions. We're not there.
What are those exceptions? If I ask you right now, what are those exceptions? Can you answer me?
I looked them up, but I can't remember them off the top of my head. I looked every last one of them up.
Yeah, I think he's screwed. And I think you should sue him under the FDCPA, him and his firm.
Okay.
Like tomorrow. That's easy for you. I'm sure you have to have regular drafts already done that you could just add parties. It should be easy for you to change.
So even though, okay, so what would I be looking at for FDCPA for an unlawful action that whatever I don't have
taking a legal
right
action
anything.
Taking a legal action they're not entitled to take.
That's the simplest one I can tell you.
Okay, so it would be because of this rule, because I know it gets a little
they
bit
they tried
more
to get the forcible entry and detainer
money.
Past the statute of limitations.
Okay,
they're trying to steal your property, they're trying to collect it to satisfy a debt.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to write that up tonight. I was so mad. I was like, I knew that I had my, had my doubts, like, oh, I'm going here and it might not work. But, I was very clear. The law is very clear. It doesn't say actions with an S. It doesn't say days. It doesn't say whenever. It's specific.
It's very specific.
Well, Keisha, you have to remember, first of all, what did the judge say? In 26 years, he's never seen anything like that.
In 26 years.
Right. So he makes a ruling on it instead of saying, you know, I'm going to have to research this and look into this before I make a ruling. Duh.
Yeah. Did you take it in there for the judge to read?
Yes. He had the copy in front of him, Jesse. Like, he has it in front of him. The attorney has his in front of him. I got my copy because I did a verified motion to dismiss. So it's got it in here. Like, it's a section that I've specifically copied and
pasted. That's the first time I've ever heard that one. Okay. All right. So, yeah, it says it's very clear. Did you read it, Dave?
No, I did not.
Yeah, it says, except as provided by sections, which I just checked and none of them were appropriate, a person must bring suit for trespass for inquiry or injury to the estate, right, which would be the property, or to the property of another, conversion of personal property, taking or detaining the personal property of another, personal injury, forcible entry and detainer, and forcible retainer not later than 2 years after the date, after the day of the cause of action accrues.
Yeah. Statute of limitations
and lapses. The cause of action accrued on June 3rd, 2014. That's when the cause of action accrued.
Yeah, and it says right here, a person must bring suit no later than 2 years after the day of the cause of action accrues in an action for injury resulting in death. The cause of action accrues on the death of the injured person. So
that's
at the end
B.
Of the day,
I only did A.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying that's very clear. It's just, you know, it's as clear as I can see it. I can't see.
Well,
how
you got a magistrate judge who is a low level judge, and they're not going to know all of the laws about stuff. Magistrate judge in your small claims court, which is where you were, your justice court. That's fairly informal proceedings, and they're not the most educated when it comes to the judicial situation, I guess, for lack of a better word.
I guess when I'm arguing this in state court now, because that's where I'm going to be filing the appeal, and I asked them to set a bond right then and there. I need you to set the bond amount. And he said, I did. I said, well, you didn't tell me what it was. He says $2,500. I said, okay, thank you. You know, and so I'm like, because I'll be filing that by Friday. But the bond, I have to pay the bond so that I can appeal it to state court, basically to move it up to the other court.
Okay, and it stalls the possession,
yes.
Correct or no?
Uh-huh. Yes,
right.
until the case is, litigated.
All right, so now
so
here's
when
what you
I'm
do. In the meanwhile, you hammer them, right, with the FDCPA. And make sure, I know Dave doesn't like the Texas version of that, but you need to look at it. And you need to see how you could possibly use it, even if it's, you're not looking for the money, you're looking for something to stick, right? Some kind of avenue that you can hammer them with.
Okay.
Is what you're looking for. Does that make sense, Dave? It's not a matter of money there. It's just a matter of what other things can I hammer them for.
Well, yeah, you can bring another action under that. You know, the problem is the money you get is nil. I mean, for all practical purposes. To me, it's not even worth writing it, but.
Yeah, but if it goes along with the Texas, Texas debt, I mean, Deceptive Texas Act, well, whatever, it can still bring me back to this Texas civil practice.
Deceptive acts and practices, right.
So when I'm arguing,
is it going to come back and get her? Will it help her, you know, in any which way, shape, or form? That's all.
Well, you put it in there, you got everything gained and nothing to lose. The most they can do is, you know, throw it out.
Right.
Gotcha.
Okay, so let me ask you this question really quick, and then I'll be done. So when I'm arguing this in state court, then when they're saying that it's each day, how do
What do you
I
mean each
know.
Day? I don't understand that either.
That's what they're saying.
What do you mean by each
day?
Day?
They're saying, the attorneys are saying, each day it's a separate act, so it's not out of the statute of limitation. So they can send it.
What
they
do you
can
mean
do
each
3 days.
See, but you're saying, Keisha, slow down. You're talking right over.
Okay.
I'm asking you to stop at a point, and you keep talking. When you say each day, did you say, can you please explain what this means? What do you mean by each day? Bring clarity to this.
Yes, I did.
I don't even understand what the hell you're saying.
And he said, because you're still in the property every day, it's a new action that it accrues. And I said, that doesn't make sense. You can only have initial injury one time. And that was on June 3rd, 2014. That was the initial injury. That's all you can go off of is when you were injured. When your client was
so
injured, when they say they were
injured. Did you look anything
they
up?
Don't have,
back you
they
up?
Don't have any. They don't have any case history, period, regarding statute of limitation because nobody has brought it in like that. They do title. They do wrongful foreclosure. They bought it up all kind of ways. I've done so much research. It's ridiculous. There's nothing that reads statute of limitation with forcible detainers. Nothing. It's all about personal injury, all about trespass, like stuff like that, but it doesn't do with mine.
Gotcha.
And that was the difficult part because, like he said, I mean, nobody's arguing and nobody has gotten, I guess, that far where they have been there that long and argued that point.
Yeah, I don't think they have a chance in hell because you can't accrue. It's like you said, if that's what he said to you, Dave, please jump in anytime you want. That would seem as if there was never a day of injury, right? A fixed date of injury, and then the statute of limitations would be null and void. It'd be you'd never have one.
Well, yeah, effectively there would be no statute of limitations.
Right? Am I
correct? Right.
So I mean, that's
like
the way I
interpret
it.
Writing a new law. That's
right,
like
okay.
Writing a new law, right? That's what I'm.
Correct.
I'm getting, you know. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to get my
You're
stuff
good.
Together to file this appeal.
But look up the.
But,
yeah, here's what you need to look up, and I know you have it, the frequently violated FDCPA.
Oh, yeah, okay. I have it right here on my desk.
And you should see that it talks about property and basically removing you from the property and taking legal actions you're not entitled to take.
Uh-huh.
And,
okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. And now when I do that, I'm going to put in
Okay,
and I'm going to put in what they sent me, the notice to vacate for the 3 days and then the statute of limitation for the Texas Civil Practices Code and all that and put all that stuff in there and then send it out to them.
Yeah, just write out the storyline and then put it in the code. But you're telling me you have no case law at all?
Not one, Jeffy. Not one. If you find something,
you know how it is, Jesse. If
I doubt
something
it.
Has never been brought up and argued, there ain't going to be anything out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look, but I'm telling you, you won't find anything. Like, I spent days. I even at Wayne in Chicago, even helped me look for something, and he was like, I don't see nothing. I said, I told you. Like, I can't find anything that relates to this situation, period.
Huh. I mean, man. Well, I read the statute. You got my blessing.
Okay. All right, guys. I'll let someone else go. I know I've taken up a lot of time, but, I mean, I appreciate it, and hopefully it could be useful for somebody else if they're dealing with it.
Wow.
Well, that'd be a good thing.
All right.
All righty. Well, thank you, Keisha.
Thank you.
All right, man live.
Oh, man.
Okay, we're going to go to 701. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello. This pre-verification search, I'm trying to get the web or the email address that is supposed to come to my box if I make a request, and it never has. And are you guys still doing that mortgage with a note?
I'm just not sure what the heck you're talking about. I'm trying to figure out exactly what you mean.
Do you do a pre-verification search?
Yeah, it's not verification. They do a free search for you to see if it's been securitized.
Securitized. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And so you need me to send in a mortgage or deed of trust with the note.
Yeah, you go to whatliesinyourmortgage.com. There's an email there, and all you do is attach it and send it. You're done.
Okay.
There's nothing coming to your box. You guys go to their box.
I see. And then if you find out it's been securitized, what do I find out from that search? Just that it's been securitized and something else?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. All right. That's all I need to know. I'll go to that website. And thank you very much.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Let's go to 646. You have been unmuted. Go ahead. Oh, man, we got a bunch of road noise here. 646, can you hear? Can you hear my voice? I think that's going to work out too good there. All right. Yeah, we can't do the road noise. You're not hearing anybody. No. Okay, if anybody has a question, hit the one key on the keypad on your phone. You know, it is a light call in the summertime here. We realize that. But if we don't get some more people to pop up with questions, we'll go ahead and wrap it up early tonight. And we'll get things done. Now, we do have another hand that popped up here, and that's 954. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for allowing me to speak this evening. I was on the last call, and I found it very intriguing, so I am back. I'm having some situations where I'm getting a lot of calls from solicitors, but they're auto-recorded messages. Sometimes I get a chance to answer and I hear it. I'm trying to speak to the people to get some information so I can go after them. But I'm having a hard time getting their information, and I was wondering what you guys are doing to get these solicitors' information so you know who to serve.
Well, you got to be creative. You just got to work and do whatever you possibly can to get those. It's harder with the telemarketing people. The debt collectors, it's not as difficult because they're more blatant about what they're doing. But when you get into the telemarketing, that's a little different animal because there's a lot of spoofing going on where they spoof their phone numbers, and it's hard to search. And in fact, in a lot of it, it's virtually impossible to search on it. And get anywhere. You just got to keep working and be creative and use every resource that you possibly can on those.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm getting.
Googling. You play with the how you search for things. I mean, you know, generally it's searching for the numbers, obviously. But, you just got to keep working at it. You never know where you're going to find. And on the first page, sometimes you can find what you're looking for on a Google search. You can find it right away. Other times, you may want to go deeper. You never know. You know, some people quit right at that first page, and that's not necessarily always a good idea.
Right. Okay. So just get creative. Got it.
Yeah, just creativity, boy, I'll tell you, really.
Yeah, that's what's needed in my case. Unfortunately, I'm not getting harassed by debt collectors at this moment. But I think I should just stir up some pots and then get some people messing with me. Because what you're doing sounds exciting.
Well, it can be pretty interesting. I mean, it really can.
Yeah.
But, persistence and ingenuity, just keep digging and searching and see what you can find is the best thing I can suggest. That's what I do. That's what all of us do.
I appreciate it. This is Dave, right?
Yeah.
talking to Dave. Okay, thank you so much, Dave. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Sure.
All righty, gentlemen, you have a good evening.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to 202. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
How are you?
I forgot I wasn't on my cell phone. I'm usually using the number 818. I'm great. How's everybody?
I'm still alive and kicking. They haven't killed me off yet. And I'm hoping I get at least one more day before they do.
Don't we all? This is Marquita, and I just had two questions, and I'm going to be really, really brief about it. My first question is, first of all, I want to tell you that I filed a lawsuit against this collection agency, Continental Credit, and I was wondering, do they contact me if they want to, in response to, with an answer, or would they contact the court? Because this is my first time filing, so I don't know the procedures like that.
Okay, well, yeah, that's the first thing I want to caution you on. You should know what the procedures are before you ever file a lawsuit.
Don't forget the ones for the webcam.
I don't know about them contacting.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. You need to understand how the process works, or you're going to be stumbling out there and you can miss things. They have to file an answer with the court, and they have 21 days to do it in federal court.
Right. So should I be checking the dockets and stuff like that to make sure that, you know, that they are, if they answer anything like that?
Well, they're supposed to send you a copy of whatever they file with the court, and then once you get going, anything that you file with the court, you have to send them a copy as well. But you really, I'm seeing here that you don't understand the process of how a lawsuit works. And that's something that you really want to get on in your education so that you understand what it is, how things move. You know, that you file a complaint, they file an answer, or maybe they file a motion to dismiss. Okay, if they file a motion to dismiss, you've got so many days to oppose that motion to dismiss, and you have to do that and file that with the court. Or if they don't do that, if they file an answer, then you have to move forward. It's your job as the plaintiff to contact the other side about doing at the 26F conference to do a joint report to the court about setting up the deadlines and everything for the case to go forward. And remember, you are the plaintiff, so you're the one driving the bus.
Right.
But you want to go in to learn a bunch on this stuff. I'm assuming you're a member. Is that correct?
Yes.
I hope. Okay.
Yes, I am.
You
want to
go in?
Okay.
Well, you need to get into the Summer Slam webinar series, because that goes through that stuff about writing a lawsuit, and then the stuff, it covers a lot of that stuff about what comes next.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes, and I have one more question.
Sure.
Should I be, am I able to, is there a limit to filing lawsuits? Am I able to file a lawsuit whenever, you know, I feel like someone violated me or anything?
I have 106 federal lawsuits against one company.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Look at you. It does, but the court didn't look at you like, okay.
That's not a normal situation. I'm going to tell you right now, you don't want to have more than one lawsuit going at a time. Period.
Okay.
No exceptions, especially for you being new.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
One of the worst things that you could possibly do would be to file a second lawsuit and have to deal with two of them with you being new, because you could get confused and then you can't keep up with things and then you really got a problem. One at a time, please. I've been dealing with this for 5.5 years, and, I took on a monumental task in doing what I'm doing. That's not the norm. Believe me, it's not the norm. And I don't recommend even to anybody experienced doing any more than two lawsuits at a time.
Oh, wow. What made you do that, though? What made you go and just keep filing?
What happened was I had claims, TCPA claims, against Midland Credit Management. They called my cell phone 113 times. And
okay.
What I did is I sued them for the first phone call. Rather than suing for all 113 calls in federal court, I knew that they were taking all their TCPA litigation into what's called an MDL, a multi-district litigation, moving it to another court in California, because I'm in Texas.
Okay.
So what I did is I sued them in small claims court for one phone call, the very first one. And tried to get them to negotiate with me. I tried to settle with them beforehand. They wouldn't respond to me. So it's like, okay, well, I'll sue you, and then now maybe you'll pay attention. Well, they settled with me on the first one. They made an offer of judgment, and they paid me. And then they thought that they could use that and say, well, that settles all the cases for all the phone calls. And it's like, no, that's not the way things were written. And they tried to put the screws to me. I filed more lawsuits in small claims court. They took them to federal. They started taking each one of these to federal court. They have spent over $45,000 in federal court filing fees with me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And you put the legal stuff on there, they're at least, so far, at $150,000.
Oh, my God.
They've spent on me. And we haven't – I've settled four cases with them, five cases with them, and resolved one. The other 106 are still out there. There are seven of them that have been resolved. There's 106 active cases that are in federal court to be litigated. Now, I kept filing the small claims suits, and they kept moving them to federal. So I'd file another one, they'd move it. Another one, they'd move it. And I kept telling them, hey – I'm going to keep doing this. You know, why don't you talk to me about settlement? They refused to talk to me about settlement. They tried to beat me in four cases in the Texas court, and the court ruled in my favor. And, in fact, the court even said maybe if the defendant would quit calling the plaintiff would quit filing lawsuits against it. The judges said that. Four cases. Four
wow.
Okay. Then they tried to get the court in California. They couldn't stop me here in the Texas court because I'm in the Dallas area. And these cases are all being taken to the Southern District of California in this MDL. They tried to get the court out there to order me to stop and to combine all the cases into one, and the court out there told them to go pound sand. I won there, too. So I kept going, and then later on, after I beat them in California, they came up and offered me $30,000 to settle, and I told them to go pound sand. It's going to be six figures.
Wow.
So that's where I am, but please don't even think about that. For you, one case, please. Those cases so
okay.
far with what I've got, with what I've got, none of these have even gotten into discovery stuff or going to, you know, this stuff going to trial or anything. And if you stack up all the paperwork, all the files that I have just for these cases with that one company, that stack of paper is 6 feet high.
Oh, my God.
That's what I've taken on. Don't do that.
I'll take that advice.
Please do.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. So, you know, when we talk about that we've got a little experience in litigating here, I think that's some pretty good evidence, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, look what Terry did with her case. She won in the 11th Circuit. So, you know, I've got a bunch under my belt. Jesse's got a lot. Larry's done a lot of litigation. John's done a bunch of litigation. So, you know, we do speak from experience, not just, oh, well, I read this somewhere on the web and this sounds good, so that's what I'll say as an answer to your question. That's not the way we operate.
Okay, great.
So
that's
please
wonderful.
Go study. Please, please, please go study, study, study. You need to understand the whole process, okay?
Mm-hmm. Will do.
All right, that take care of your questions?
Yes, thank you.
All righty, thank you very much. All right, I'm going to ask another time here if there's...
Yeah.
If there's anybody that's got a question, now's the time to hit the one key and the keypad in your phone, because if you don't do that pretty quick, I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up here, and we'll get done a little early tonight, which is okay, because I've got some research work to do, and I've been keeping an eye on the markets here. I snagged a little money out of the Dow futures while we've been talking tonight. And considering the market's been dead on its heels the last several days, that's all right. So, well, I don't see anybody with a hand going up. So tomorrow, Terry, you want to talk about what you're going to be doing on the webinar tomorrow afternoon?
Oh, we'll be discussing after the dispute.
After the dispute, and this has got to do with FCRA, everybody. So if you guys are dealing with credit reports.
I'm doing that because the number of people, I just don't understand it, but the number of people who go through the webinars, both the one done in November and the updated one on credit reporting in February, they understand what you do when you make a dispute, and I'm not getting those kind of questions. What I'm getting is, well, okay, they did this, and this, now what? And I know I covered that, but I need to go into it a little deeper, I guess. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow.
Okay, and that is 3 o'clock Eastern, and that's for members only. And, of course, if you're not a member, I don't know what to tell you, because you can become a member for $1. $1 for the first week, and after that it's $49 a month for as long as you want to be a member, no commitments. But the best part is it's risk-free because there's a 60-day money-back guarantee. A buck gets you in the door. I mean, if you got that much silver in your pocket, go for it. And you can learn an awful lot. So then, of course, tomorrow night then, Terry gets to do double duty tomorrow, because tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern is Terry's call, which is another Q&A type call like this. It's a support call. And if you're not on her email list to get the reminders and the information she sends out for some odd reason, send an email right now to queensongbird@gmail.com. Just say, please put me on the list. You can even put that in the subject line. But do it right now. Don't wait, because if you wait, you probably won't get the reminder in time for the call. And hers is on a different system. It's not on Blog Talk here. Then, of course, the rest of the week through the weekend, the members, again, have got the use of the forum. You can post questions. You can go in there, and you can study over 20,000 postings, questions and answers that have been put in there, and it's all broken down by subject, you know, whether you're interested in the TCPA or taking their money or protecting your assets or the saving your home section. There's all sorts of stuff in there. And then, of course, while you're there, go down to the success section down at the bottom of the page in the forum and go in and look at some of those comments and some of the copies of checks that people have gotten over the last few years. It's not 1 or 2 or 3 or 10 or 15 or 20. It's a whole lot more than that, and there's a whole lot of moolah. The evidence is right there that what we talk about and what we do works, and it's not just us doing it. It's all the members that contribute to that kind of stuff. So all the stuff is there. Then after the weekend, we start the week off with Dallas debt discussion on Monday night. That's at 9 o'clock Eastern. It's an hour later than the Tuesday and Wednesday calls. 9 o'clock Eastern. It's still on TalkShoe.com. And the PIN number for that is 54318. And we do that 2 hours. We're in our eighth year, and I've never missed a Monday night in over 7 years. So we're always there, and we're here to help you. It doesn't cost you anything. We spend the time to do this to help you guys so that you can learn what we've learned to be effective in dealing with these people when they step on your rights. I'm not going to let them do it with impunity, and I hope you don't either.
I'm with you.
So,
that's right.
Jesse, all yours. Wrap her up.
Guys, thank you for joining us. God bless everybody. I hope everybody has their kids going back to school, because I know tomorrow it begins. Just so you guys know, I know here in Florida the kids are going back. It's a big relief for a lot of parents. been busy, like David said. The summer's kind of slow, so hopefully we can get back in the mood and back into the swing of things going into the fall, which won't be happening for a while.
It's hot.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Thanks to all the moderators again. I know John's gone this week on vacation. Good for him. Happy for him. With that being said, everybody, enjoy your week. Terry, thanks for tomorrow. I might even join you on that one because I have my own disputes. So I might give you a busy day tomorrow trying to get. Yeah, I have my own. I told Dave about it 2 weeks ago. I still haven't a chance. I've just been so busy. And so I might jump on that call just to listen. I just have so many things to do. So, but anyway, you guys have a great night. Again, thank you for joining us. And thanks to our moderators. We just absolutely cannot do it without you guys. So God bless. Good night. And talk to you tomorrow. Thank you, David. Appreciate you, man.
Dave,
you bet.
Check your
Good night,
email.
Everybody.
Good night.